from time to time on our morning show and on KAXE, KBXE, we get a chance to check in with Bart Johnson. He's the provost of Itasca Community College. Today, he brought with him the new chancellor of the Minnesota State System of Colleges and Universities. Hi, Bart. Hope you will introduce us to our guest.
Well, hi, Heidi. Thanks again for having me on the air. And it is exciting. First of all, when we're recording this, it is graduation day at ICC, so a lot of excitement. But especially with having Chancellor Malhotra here, it really is exciting and an honor to have him here at campus tonight for graduation. So I had to admit, Chancellor, I couldn't pass up on the opportunity. Thought, we got to get him on the air while he's here. And hope to get through at least a couple of things in this session. One, just a little bit of your background personally and with Minnesota State. And then, of course, a chance for you to share what's happening at a state level in the Minnesota State College and University system. So, Chancellor?
Thank you. Thank you, Bart. And it's always a pleasure to come visit Itasca Community College, but more importantly, Grand Rapids and the region. You know, and thank you for the opportunity for us to share part of our story and the statewide impact Minnesota State Colleges and Universities have. You know, many of our fine institutions are within your listening area. You know, obviously, our five community colleges, which are part of the Northeast Higher Education District, but more importantly than Central Lakes College and Bemidji State University, too. With regard to my personal background, you know, I'm an accidental administrator. And I was in retirement, as you know, but I know the system well. And I came in the interim role. And then, you know, we are in the midst of a massive rethink, so it's hard to walk away. And so I am indeed humbled and honored when the Board of Trustees asked me to continue as the permanent chancellor. I have spent almost 8 years in the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, 5 years at St. Cloud State University, 2 years at Metropolitan State University, and then now a year at the system office as interim chancellor first and now as chancellor. I'm an economist by trade. I got my PhD in economics from Kansas State University, and then I followed the regular academic progression at University of Akron in Ohio, and where I was, when I left, I was tenured professor of economics. And from there, I went to University of Southern Maine in Maine. And then from Maine, I came to Minnesota. And since then, I have just stayed in Minnesota. So that's a very abbreviated, short bio of my own. With regard to Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, we are a system of 37 institutions, 30 colleges and 7 universities. And together, we service almost 375,000 students. 288,000 students, or thereabout, somewhere between 280 and 288 students are enrolled in our colleges and universities. It's a very large system, in both in size and scope. It's a very complex system. Complexity emanates that our institutions traverse 47 communities across the state with 54 campuses. They are located both in rural areas as well as in urban areas and semi-urban areas. We not only have two-year community colleges, we have also technical colleges, and then we have universities, which have four-year degrees and graduate programming, going up to doctoral programs now. And so it's in size and scope, we are a very large system. We are also a very diverse system. To just give you a sense of our diversity, almost 63,000 students of color are of native origins, 84,000 low-income students, 50,000 first-generation students, 10,000 veterans are enrolled in our colleges and universities. And so if you look at the size and scope, it's best reflected to what Bart alluded a little bit earlier, that this is our commencement season. Today, There is commencement at Atascocá Community College. Together, all our colleges and universities, during the course of this year, have graduated close to 40,000 students. Now, just to give you a sense, I think that's about 2.5 times the population of Grand Rapids.
I think you're right.
It just tells you the impact we have, because these students, 87% of our 40,000 graduates will work within the state of Minnesota. So we draw our students from the communities in which we are located, and then our students, after they graduate, they go back and they work in those communities. So they not only transform through higher education their own lives, but they also impact the economic and social vitality of the communities in which they live and work. And so we are very, very proud of that impact we have and the work our colleges and universities, under leaders like Bart and President Mackey of the Northeast Higher Education District, the work our institutions do in preparing our students so that we can provide Minnesota the talent it needs to continue to progress and thrive.
If I can, I would like to ask you to explain a phrase you use. You said we're in the midst of a massive rethink.
Yes.
I know that's not an easy question, but what do you mean by that?
Yeah, I know actually that's a very valid question. So what I mean by that is, if you look at last 20 years, 30 years or so around ourselves, there has been an explosion of knowledge around the physical phenomena. There has been an explosion of knowledge around life sciences. Technology has altered the way we live our lives in almost every facet of it. It has altered the way we communicate. Demographics have changed very dramatically. The geopolitical power shifts are occurring. And we have moved from an industrial economy to an information-based economy to a knowledge-based economy now. Just to give you a sense that nationally, 2/3 of all the emerging jobs will require some post-secondary credentials. Half of the jobs will require a baccalaureate degree. In Minnesota, 75% of the emerging jobs will require some post-secondary credentials. What that means is that our colleges and universities, such as at the Atascocá Community College, would be instrumental in preparing our graduates to be effective in the workforce. So things around us are changing very dramatically. Our budget realities are changing too. 20 years ago, 2/3 of our support would come from the state, and tuition accounted for 1/3 of our revenues. That is flipped now. It has changed a little bit in the last 3-4 years, but it is still overwhelmingly now, our students are paying for their own education, and only about 1/3 or so we are getting from the state in many instances. So in that regard, I think we have to ask ourselves the question that if we have to prepare for our students for the jobs which have not yet emerged, which means we would need to meet their higher education needs all through their life cycle. They won't come to us just out of high school. They'll come to us at various points in their life. And as we think of that, we have to ask ourselves the question, our colleges and universities, our programmatic structures, our curricular designs, our modes of deliveries aligned to the changing demographics? Are they aligned to the changing needs of the learners? Are they aligned to the changing budget realities? Are they aligned to the changing workforce needs? And that's what I mean. We are in a massive rethink. And so we will have to ask ourselves the question, do we have the capacity to deliver on what we are asked to do? And in order to deliver, what kinds of expertise, capacity, programmatic structures, curricular designs, paradigms around our modes of delivery, we will have to provide. How do we get to a point where we are not only meeting the needs of our workforce today, not only preparing our students for the first job they will get, but preparing them also for the second, third, and the fourth job they will walk into. Because a person entering labor force today will change jobs at least 3 to 5 times. And so that's what we mean by the massive rethink. In short, if you take all of this, what are we being asked to do is, at one level, we are asked to increase the scale of our operations. Recruit more students, bring in more students, keep more students, and have them progress in an orderly manner and take them across the finish line. That is one part. On the other part, we are being asked to personalize and individualize the educational experience of each and every student and to meet the student where they are, not only locationally, but also in their life cycle. And so this will require a very different mode of operation. That's what I mean by the massive rethink. And that's why I came out of retirement. It was hard to walk away from this fight. You know, because in some ways, one doesn't get very many opportunities in one's career to rethink one's own profession. And that's what leaders like Bart and leaders like President Mackey are doing.
Well, Chancellor, I appreciate you didn't walk away from the fight. And in fact, I know you recently had an opinion piece in the Grand Rapids Herald Review, along with about 6 other regional newspapers. And they were each kind of, you know, tailored to each community, but they're kind of related to what's happening at the legislative level right now. Do you mind briefly recapping what's happening there and
sure.
what you hope to see as the chancellor take place?
Sure. The legislature will adjourn in about 10 days now. And the governor has made amply clear that he's not going to call a special session. So for us, it's crunch time. And so we want to make sure that the communities and the people we serve, they understand what we are asking for and why we are asking for that. And so our request is threefold. One is supplemental support. There we are asking for $10 million. And this is the funding which we need to correct some structural deficits which our colleges and universities in their budgets are facing. And that structural deficit has partly emerged because of the way where the biennium budget was funded. It was front-loaded. So basically what that means is 55% of the allocation of the 2 years came in the first year, and we got 45% in the second. So that left a hole in the second year. And so we are asking for $10 million to plug that and to go a considerable way in resolving the structural budget deficits. Second is our bonding request, which falls into 2 categories. We are asking for asset preservation of $130 million. Asset preservation is a fancy name for repair and maintenance. Many of our buildings are really in a state of disrepair, so much so that the educational experience we can provide to our students very often is seriously compromised. Basically, our deferred maintenance at this particular point in time is close to $950 million. And so $130 million will not solve the whole problem, but it'll make a considerable dent. And so here, our objective is very simple. We want to keep our students warm, safe, and dry so that we can mount the educational experience and the kind of academic experience our students need and deserve. And second is a capital request for 15 different projects. These are redesigns of the classrooms so that we can bring state-of-the-art technology in it. It may be redoing some of our labs or adding labs so we can put in place the expansion which is needed in some of our high-demand programs. And so we are asking for about $94.5 million there. And then lastly, we are asking for $21 million in what we call ISRS Next Gen, which is really a strategic investment to replace our antiquated 20-year-old information technology system, which keeps our records, the student records, employment records, as well as our financial records. Now, just to give you a sense, the system is 20 years old. So when it was created, the operating instructions were in COBOL language. And COBOL language is extinct right now. In fact, of the, you know, of all the employees we have, which help us keep the existing system functional, there are only two or three left who even know COBOL language. And once they are gone, it is gone. And plus, what is happening is, it is a very critical infrastructure we need to do our work and to support our students. And so what has happened is that we are increasingly engaged in repairing and maintaining an antiquated system to keep it fully functional. And those costs have gone up dramatically too. And so it is not that we are asking for some new toy. It is basically to provide a fundamental underlying technology system so that we can provide the kind of educational experience our students need and deserve. And we can do the things which we currently cannot do with our antiquated system through the appropriate use of technology. So those are really the three areas. Now, one may ask the question very often which arises is that, we heard that your enrollments are declining, and so how come you're asking for more money? When your enrollments are declining, you should have some money left over. I want to be absolutely clear, and I want to underscore, what we are asking for the state to fund is not to fund our declining enrollment. We have already made those adjustments. Our leaders of our colleges and universities, like Bart, like President Mackey, each and every day, they are making tough choices. They are dealing with those challenges. Just to give you a sense how we have dealt with that challenge of declining enrollment, since 2009, for the system as a whole, enrollment has declined by 8%. Our employee workforce in the same time period has gone down by 7.3%. So we have already made those adjustments. What we are asking the state is to help us meet our structural deficits, to provide us with adequate and appropriate physical and technological infrastructure so we can mount the kind of educational experience which is needed to meet the talent needs of not only today and the talent shortages of not only today, but also of tomorrow, so that Minnesota indeed can secure its future. So we are asking the legislature to fund strategic investments in creating and helping us meeting the workforce needs of the state of Minnesota. So really, in some ways, we are saying that, look, if you help us with these two elements, it'll do a few things. It'll help us keep the lights on, but more importantly, through internal allocations, it'll help us make some strategic investments which will enable our students not only to get ready for the jobs which exist today, but the jobs which are yet to come. And just to give you a sense, the 10 most high-demand occupations today, many among them didn't exist 15 or 20 years ago. And so we are in a very different, fast-paced world, which will require a very different configuration of our resources and which will require some additional investments. So that's what we are asking for. We are not asking the state to subsidize or to fund our declining enrollments. We are, each and every year, making those adjustments.
Anything else, Bart?
Well, I guess maybe I'd turn it over to you, Heidi. Okay. I mean, as a community leader, what question do you have? I mean, what's something out there that if you had, you know, well, you have the chance to ask the person that, you know, leads the largest, one of the largest really higher education systems in the United States. Is it like the fourth?
It's the fourth largest of our time.
What would you want to know?
Well, you know, I read the MinnPost article on you, and I saw words in there, like you said, we need to be bold and courageous, and I think I'm hearing that in what you've said about thinking about the future and how things are changing. What are you seeing on, like, at Itasca Community College or Hibbing Community College that really are keeping up with that, the future and future jobs, some examples of that?
Sure. So a couple of things. You know, we have 16,000 dedicated, passionate faculty and staff across the whole state. And they are doing some incredible work. There is innovative work going on everywhere. Itasca Community College, look at the pre-engineering program, how it is then linked to the Iron Range engineering program at the baccalaureate level. And that's just one example. What I see there is a system which opens the doors of hope and opportunity to all Minnesotans. And this is where our demographics of our students come into play. 84,000 low-income students. 84,000. Now, that is more than low-income students served by all other higher education providers in the state of Minnesota put together.
Hmm.
Now, what this means is that we are serving students who come from economically fragile communities and economically fragile families. But they are also our hope. If we provide them the opportunity, they are our hope. Just to give you a sense, the demographics of the state of Minnesota are changing. So we know that the workforce of tomorrow will be diverse. What that means is we will be drawing students from the communities which typically have had very low participation rates in higher education. Now, on the other side, as I said a little bit earlier, 75% of the emerging jobs in Minnesota will require some post-secondary credential. You match the two. What does this require? We have to increase the scale of operations and draw students from communities which have traditionally had barriers and low participation rates, and then bring them across the line to be successful. Now it is in that sense I say that we are indeed the flagship system of the state of Minnesota. And purely from that perspective, I think that is the challenge which we have to meet. And when I visit colleges like the Itasca Community College or Hibbing Community College, what brings home to me is that the critical nature of their work, not only for the communities in which they are located, but indeed for the economic and social vibrancy for the whole state. And that is something we are proud of, but at the same time, we know our challenge. We know our challenge. And our challenge is to increase the scale of our operations even further, and at the same time, make sure we meet the needs of our students at all points of their life cycle. Put together, we become the imperative for the state of Minnesota.
Well, if you don't mind me saying, I don't think it was time for you to retire.
In some ways, retirement was great in first 5-6 months, but then it starts weighing on you, because what happens is you don't just walk away from a lifetime of work.
Yeah. So you're both heading to graduation. I suspect, Bart, you and Chancellor, you've been through many graduations. Is it still exciting for you to see the students that are moving on?
Yeah, I referred to some of the challenges earlier, but when we are standing on that stage and when we see those students walk across that stage, it becomes all worthwhile. Mm-hmm. When we look into their eyes, we see the future not only of their work and life, but we see the future of our communities, of our state, of our nation, indeed, of our planet.